Welcome to the podcast, Keep It Simple. Join our hosts, Tom LeComp and Gavin Durson, as they discuss the joys and challenges of being a simple church in a complex world. On today's podcast, we have a special treat for our listeners. We're interviewing via Skype Miguel and Claudia Labrador. They're missionaries working in Ecuador with Pathways International. Miguel and Claudia are making disciples and encouraging the formation of simple churches near Mindo, Ecuador. Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Tom, and I have a very special guest today. And we're talking with Miguel and Claudia Labrador, and they're living in Mindo, Ecuador. They feel like we're kindred spirits. We know them almost exclusively on social media, and this is the first time we've ever met, you know, in live real time. So I think they have a lot to say about discipleship, and I know they have a lot to say about simple forms of church. So we thought we'd call them up today via Skype. And this is Bonnie. This is my wife, Bonnie.
Hi.
This is Miguel.
Hi, Miguel. Nice to meet you.
Claudia's in the background. Oh, there's Claudia.
Oh, hi.
So, hi.
Hey, we just want to say we want to come down and visit you guys if you know, we're not a burden sometime. Yeah. And you guys are always welcome in Louisville. Yeah. You guys have a place to stay.
Like, we want to come this week because it's 0 degrees here now, so minus 30 below last night.
We booked the plane ticket, so we'll be there tomorrow. So
we'll kick out our house guests for you.
Yeah. Well, in exchange, we have rivers flowing in the front yard, and we're in the heavy rainy season right now. So yesterday we had a very bad thunderstorm, and it knocked out the power in most of the town except for our end. And that's kind of typical for this time of year through January and February, very heavy rains.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you're in Ecuador. That's in Africa, right?
Yeah. Your geography is stupendous. Yeah. I would say the western horn of South America.
Okay. Yeah. One of the things that inspired us to go to the mission field was the story of Jim Elliott and Nate Saint and all that. How far are you from where that happened?
I would say we are about 10 hours drive, right? From Shell. We're about 10 hours drive from where they were.
Okay, yeah. And if you're not familiar with that story, it's a story of the five missionaries in Ecuador that were killed in 1956. But that served to send so many missionaries to the field, I think. But Miguel, just briefly, what do you guys do down there?
That's a good question. We have we initially came down with a traditionary missionary approach, and soon came to realize that just wasn't going to cut it here. But in a nutshell, we are dedicated to making disciples by preaching the gospel in one of the most culturally diverse regions on the planet. We're currently in 29 communities right now. We do some international relief as well with regard to poverty, community development, water filtration projects, drilling wells. You would think that there would be enough water here, but that's generally not the case. So we get involved in medical projects from time to time where appropriate, but mainly it's focused on getting the gospel to people who don't know it. And making disciples who make disciples.
Cool, very cool. I know that we originally came to be aware of your work through your blogs and especially through some of your writings on Simple Church and House Church websites. And so how much is that form of church involved in your ministry?
I'd say it's at the heart of it. Initially, my introduction to simple, organic house church was a little weird, I think, because most folks seemed to have a chip on their shoulder, and the theology was a little shaky, so I didn't really pay much attention to it, but God was developing in us the desire to simplify our manner of gathering, mission, church, and evangelism. And, you know, we're in 29 communities right now. We've got something going on pretty much every day of the week. The gathering in homes, small. We have, I would say, one, two, maybe three out of those communities have a what would be considered more of a traditional kind of gathering. But other than that, we are highly mobile, almost nomadic. But we have a lot of gatherings going on in the week, every day except for Friday. There's something going on. And we've got about, I would say, about three solid teams of people with any number of between 6 and 12 going out on any given day. So there's at least one to two communities, maybe even three communities being reached every day. Some of it is pure evangelism, where the gospel is not known, where people still don't know what a Bible is. They haven't heard the name of Christ. Others are in communities that are steeped in Catholicism, but again, have no real sense of what the gospel is. And others are well-developed communities that have just gone by the wayside because of lack of follow-up from the Christian community. So there's lots of participatory, simple, interactive, leaderless gatherings going on, but it's a lot more than that.
I'd like to say that it's really a very organic approach to even going a simple church route or organic church because we're in a very rural setting here in Ecuador. People don't have cars. Most of the people out here are very poor in the rural areas of Ecuador, and they do a lot of walking or catching a public bus if they can get to a major road. And so getting from community to community to attend a church, as we are very familiar with the dynamics of church in the West, it's not really a common thing. So it's a very organic growth, a very move of the spirit, if you will, that when people become believers, then they start congregating with their neighbors in their homes because it's close, it's easy to get to, they're working till late in the day, and they don't have many hours of daylight left when they're finished working before they go home and put a meal on the table and that sort of thing. So a lot of our work is done in the late afternoon and evenings because of the work. We cater a lot to the workers of these haciendas and rural farms. And so we didn't plan to be simple or organic in the sense of the website that we were visiting, Simple Church, and that, but it just happened naturally, and it's beautiful.
It is. Hey, guys, I want you to meet Gavin, my partner in crime. This is Gavin Durson.
And it's nice to meet you all. It's exciting to hear what God's doing in your area, and I'm just kind of intrigued by your all story, and I would be interested. I think I'd be interested in kind of your thoughts, and forgive me if this is something that has already been discussed, but why do you feel like what you're seeing there happening in Ecuador, why can't that happen? Why isn't that happening more in the West? Why isn't that happening more here in America?
I think part of it is community has shaped itself here in a family dynamic. You have families working together, and everybody sort of knows each other, and they stop on the street and say hello to one another, and we've moved away from that in the United States. We don't have porches anymore. We don't speak to our neighbors. We barely even know our neighbors' names. You know, and we're not active in our communities because our communities become a workplace or something like that, whereas these people aren't career motivated and they don't move very quickly like we do in the United States. People take time to speak and get to know one another. So I think that adds a natural dynamic to a simple type of gathering.
Yeah, one of the reasons I'm more and more convinced Number one, there's certain limitations that institutionalism puts on not only the gathering of the saints, but the transmission of the gospel. And for us, you know, back in 2006 when we first got here, our gospel was basically four spiritual laws, lead them in a prayer, you know, 97% attrition rate after 3 weeks. Now we're completely reversed. If we have a 3% attrition rate, it would surprise me. We have 11 generations of disciples, probably more now. I used to know everybody's names in the chain, but I can name at least three chains of four generations deep right now. And beyond that, it gets a little shady. I think our manner of communicating the gospel to various families in the region, I think it's been developed primarily because of the cultural diversity in this region. We're in the middle of the Andes Mountains, and there's so many pocketed communities with different stories, different music, different history, different senses of truth and words and ideas. And so what it's done is it's given us a tremendous appreciation for the breadth of the gospel. And we've had to adapt to that. You know, Claudius said we basically didn't have a choice earlier as far as the assemblies of the saints and the organic nature of it. But I think that also applies to the gospel. So we have a very, very robust manner of communicating the gospel in a multitude of different cultural contexts. And it's made us pretty sharp. Now, when we've both gone back to the States on various occasions, we've had the opportunity to interact with institutional organizations as well as some home and organic churches. And they always ask me the same question, Gavin. They always ask me, why aren't we as successful as you guys over there? And I always say, well, let me hear you present the gospel to me. And afterwards, I'm always saying, well, you know, that's good, but what about this and what about that? And, you know, we're not in a hurry. We trust the Lord. So if it takes us 4 to 5 weeks to communicate the gospel to a specific person or family, then it takes 4 or 5 weeks. We don't press for a decision. We don't use the sinner's prayer. We use baptism, and when people are ready for baptizing, we explain what it is. And so we're looking at multi-level generations of disciples without attrition. You know, young kids, they go in and out, but I think for the most part, the way we communicate the gospel is, you know, in Philippians, I think it says Paul thanks them for their participation in the gospel. Mm-hmm. And I love that because I think that's what it is. You know, I think the gospel should be dialogical. I mean, there should be conversation back and forth and an exchange of ideas and stories. As long as we're communicating what we would think is the complete and correct gospel of Christ, regardless how long it takes, what were you going to say?
Well, when we actually have weekly Bible studies in all of the different communities. They gather weekly as a community. But then throughout the week, many of them will pick a day and go out into other communities. And so they're actually a missional church in addition to being a simple church. Mm-hmm. And that's really the full picture of how church is going here organically.
Yeah. We get them involved in mission from day one.
Yeah.
From day one that they – and it's funny here because we say if they have an interest in the things of God, then we will continue with them.
Yeah.
Once they discount the interest or have no interest, then we move on to people who do. It's not really like a Luke 10 situation, but it's sort of like that.
Yeah. Don't you think that I know something that I think this whole path is God's been teaching me. I think for a lot of my life growing up in the, I guess what Kentucky's pretty much considered the Bible Belt, but the gospel is a lot of times presented as you're saved from hell. You're saved from your sin. And I think that I think something that Simple Church highlights is that it's also true of the Gospels that you're saved from those things. That's a part of it. But you're saved into a spiritual family. When you are become a Christian, you're born again, you're saved, but you're born into this spiritual family. And I think that Simple Church and what you guys are doing, that is communicated very tangibly. It's not you're saved into this organization, you're not saved into a weekly meeting. You're saved into this family of people that care for you and that love you and that are walking with you. And that's what I'm hearing that's happening there.
That's exactly right. When we pass through a community, we actually pick up people from that community to go with us to another community to attend a study, and they really get involved and they get to know other people. So if somebody's suffering in a community, we actually hear it sometimes from a nearby community to them and not their actual community that's suffering. And that's really a blessing because we know that they're involved with each other. And we were in a home of a woman a couple of weeks ago sharing the gospel. She's dying of cancer. She's not being treated because it's too far progressed. And we were praying for healing. And there were families there from four different communities praying and, just loving on this woman. And it was the first time that she had ever heard the gospel. And so she didn't just hear it. She saw it in action. And that's really what we need to be communicating is an active gospel, not just the words.
You're living it, not just...
Yeah, that's why I need my wife along with me. I could be such a theological egghead, and she'll go right up there and, extend her hand to the leper.
Well, I've seen some of the outlines that you produced. I know you do some pastoral training. You're teaching pastors. Talk a little bit about that. What does that involve?
I'd say on a weekly basis, in what we call discipleship group in our home, we have about anywhere between six and a dozen core leaders, three of which are pastors, sometimes four are pastors of local congregations.
And young people
within their communities. We were joking about that today because usually when I go visit someplace that's more institutional with one of the pastors that are involved in our weekly discipleship group, I hear them preaching or teaching on something we've covered from the week before, which is great. It's a lot of responsibility, but it's great. The other thing we've got going on since January of last year is a seminary in the middle of the Cloud Forest region of Ecuador, and we've got about 20 to 30 students, I'd say about 20 that are faithful and another 10 that are hit or miss, and it's run on an organic church model. So there is definitely some deep teaching going on various subjects. But again, it's modeled after a simple church or an organic church. There's a lot of dialogue. It's totally participatory. We pray. We worship. It's one Saturday per month. So we're looking at 8 to 10 hours of instruction per month and about 270 to 300 hours of application per month. So it's completely reversed from what people would consider seminary.
And those who are attending, they don't pay to attend. And everyone who's attending belongs to different communities. And we pool resources together to provide the meal and rotate people to cook for the students of the seminary that month. And so it's really cool.
Oh, wow. So that's just crazy talk. You don't charge any money.
No.
Nice.
Now, it's the thing about working in this part of the country. You know, Claudia and I have been the only cross-cultural missionaries in this region for 10, 12 years, probably more. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to be gained financially by working here. Mm-hmm. There's no, taking up an offering to support the Labradors. There's no... So something like seminary becomes a little daunting in the fact that the only way it can sustain itself is by the good graces of people outside. Mm-hmm. Now, we're finally getting to the place where some of the students are giving up, their hard-earned money in whatever form it comes to help with the lunch that we have on seminary days and, basic supplies, papers. Most of the time, Claudia and I provide those things through the donations that we receive for mission here in Ecuador. But it's going really well. And I'm hoping this year to put some certification into it so that the folks here can take the hours that they've spent, not only in practice but in study, and apply it to local colleges and universities here in Ecuador. It's an extremely difficult task, especially with the new laws about education and everything going on here in Ecuador. Yeah. But we're considering Johnson University and a couple of other folks put some teeth into a certification program for the seminary. That's an ongoing project. This month, the subject is the gospel, and we'll probably spend 2 months on doing that. The course material is streamlined, optimized, shaken down, because we've got to get it delivered to them in a day.
Yeah.
And then they have basically a month to do their assignments and keep up with the practice that they're already involved in. Every student in seminary is involved in mission already before they became students of the seminary. So. Uh-huh.
So it's very practical in that you don't take them out of their life or out of their ministry to teach them. You teach them for one day, and then they go back and practice.
Exactly. You know, I always say if you take somebody out of their context to disciple them, it's not discipleship, it's domestication. And I believe that. I don't want to uproot them from where they are, train them in some other environment, and then cut them loose contextually irrelevant way.
Yeah.
So it's very important for us to have them gather from their different communities in a central location for fellowship, for encouragement, for strengthening, to get together and talk about the word, and then get them right back into their communities. And the next day, every single one of them are out in their local context, doing not only their day-to-day work and living their day-to-day lives, but continuing on with mission. And we don't divide the two. We don't say that there's a secular side of life and a spiritual side of life. You know, it's all part of it.
I got a question for you guys. I mean, I think that, you know, we've joked that there may be two or three people listening to this podcast that we're doing. And my suspicion is that a lot of those folks might be people that are connected to what we're doing, or they've stumbled, you know, they're here in America, they're stumbled upon this podcast, and they're interested in you know, moving away from more traditional forms of church, and God's got them on a path. That's my suspicion. Maybe if you're out there and that's not you, send me an email, and I'd love to hear kind of how you found this and what your deal is. I'm just kind of interested in what you guys would say to someone that's in that spot, with all that you guys have experienced there and what you're seeing God do and all the lessons that you've learned, to the guy that's, you know, he's got a job, he's got a family, his kids are, you know, he's in the American culture, he's got kids in sports or whatever, and he's kind of running a lot of different ways. But there's something about this idea of following Jesus simply in a more organic church idea. What would you say to that person as they're contemplating this call?
Well, I for me, the first thing I thought about was family, and in our culture in the States, you spend half your time at work and half your time with your family, and you don't have a lot of time to do much else. And I think that it would be really cool to pack up the family and take your meal on the run one evening and go out and minister to somebody as a family. It doesn't, you know, a lot of our ideas about missions and going out is like individually as a church group, you got interested parties and they leave their families and go for a little trip, or, you know, a few people get involved in something. And rarely do you actually see family ministry growing on and growing together. But what a wonderful concept, because then you're raising up your children in the way as well, not just going and doing what you know the Lord, you know, is calling you to do, but raising up your children in that as well, very practically.
Yeah, I think something that I know that for me, I wrestle a lot with, and I think that a lot of people do, and trying to train people here to think missionally and to think about making disciples and seeing churches planted and multiplied in this context, is I think that it is hard for people here to come to grips with the idea that they are missionaries and that they have already been sent to their mission field, and it's right under their nose. And thinking like a missionary, thinking as a people that are have been sent to make disciples and fulfill the Great Commission, right here where they are in the middle of their everyday life that is very Western. I mean, I think we get the idea of sending people to another country to be a missionary, and that we kind of understand that call and we understand the value of that. But helping people to think and live as missionaries right here in the United States is something that I think is very much, it's essential to this call of what we're talking about as far as simple church and thinking that way. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think John 20:21 is critical. The thing about everybody's a missionary, we're all missionaries in our own context, we're already sent where we are. I think you can go to two extremes on that. Number one, it opens the gate so wide that people panic because they just don't know what to do with all that liberty. On the other side, it could harm those that are already cross-cultural in context, those who have already crossed the border. And so, you know, there's always this little bit of tension between being a missionary where you are, being a missionary where God would have you.
You've been listening to Keep It Simple, a podcast dedicated to the idea of being the church in simple ways. Find us on the web at keepitsimplepodcast.com. That's keepitsimplepodcast.com. You can also like us on Facebook at Keep It Simple, a simple church podcast. Or you can find us on iTunes. We welcome your feedback and your prayers.